about the conclusion of that great story in Nehemiah chapter 6. And so Nehemiah chapter 6, let's see. Is this working? Okay. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 15 and 16. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. And it happened when all our enemies heard of it and all the nations around us saw these things that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. Now, to me, this is one of the most inspirational and motivating stories found in the Scriptures. It was absolutely incredible and monumental what this remnant of Jewish survivors was able to accomplish in just 52 days, especially when you consider the very challenging circumstances that they faced as they did this great work. I'd invite you to go back to the beginning of the book, to the beginning of the story, Nehemiah chapter 1, and we're going to do some Bible reading together this morning. That's always good to do, just read straight from the text. But Nehemiah chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, the words of Nehemiah the son of Hakaliah came to pass in the month of Cheslev in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. So it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you, both my father's house and I have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you, and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, nor the ordinances which you commanded your servant Moses. Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you are cast out to the farthest parts of the heavens, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Now these are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name. And let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, why is your face sad since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart. So I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies waste and its gates are burned with fire? Then the king said to me, what do you request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it pleases the king and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. Then the king said to me, the queen also sitting beside him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Furthermore, I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the region beyond the river, that they must permit me to pass through till I come to Judah.
and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he must give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which pertains to the temple, for the city wall, and for the house that I will occupy. And the king granted them to me, according to the good hand of my God upon me. Then I went to the governors in the region beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent the captains of the army and horsemen with me. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard of it, they were deeply disturbed that a man had come to seek the well-being of the children of Israel. Well, again, we mentioned how incredible it was that these walls that have been destroyed are about to be rebuilt in 52 days, especially in light of the very challenging circumstances that the people faced to accomplish that great work. And we want to observe those things. Now, you consider with me the condition of the people of Jerusalem when Hanani, one of the brethren of Nehemiah, came to where he was at and relayed to him after Nehemiah asked him concerning the people, the survivors who are left, and the city of Jerusalem. He says the people are in great distress. They're in reproach. The people are discouraged. The people are mocked and looked down upon. They're reproached. So the condition of the people were not good. And then the condition of the walls, Jerusalem, he says, they're broken down and the gates are burned with fire. Now, the way it reads in the text, you would think that just had happened, right? When Hanani comes to him in verse 2 and 3, and I asked him concerning the Jews that escaped, who survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And he said, the survivors, verse 3, who are left from the captivity in the province, they're in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down. Its gates are burned with fire. It's almost like that just happened the other day. But it's been a long time now. You know, the destruction of Jerusalem was in about 586 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar's Babylonian army destroying the city at that time. The temple destroyed, the walls destroyed. There's really three distinct, at least, deportations that take place. And the first group that was taken away, Daniel and his friends would have been a part of that. And then now this final fall of Jerusalem. But then we, you know, there was a 70-year Babylonian captivity that began with that first deportation to Babylon. And then Cyrus, remember Cyrus? Isaiah even prophesied of him, what, about 100 years before he was even born, named him as the Lord's shepherd, my shepherd. And Cyrus's decree was that God's people go back and build his house. And so that was in 539 B.C. The temple was rebuilt in 516. And then Nehemiah returns, our main character here, our book, our story. He returned to Judah in 445 B.C. Now we do a little math there. Cyrus's decree when they could return to the land was 539 to when the walls were rebuilt in 445. That's about 94 years. Think about that. Almost 100 years have passed since the people have been back. And the way it reads in the text, it's like it just happened. No, they've been back for a long time. No one's done anything about it. And you think about how critically important walls are. We can think about that in our own country and borders and walls and protection in any country, but especially in ancient times, and how open and vulnerable you are to the enemy when you don't have your walls around your city. And yet this is how they've been existing for almost 100 years. Nehemiah hears about this and knows something needs to be done, and he is determined to do something about it. But it's not just the condition of the people. You think about today and maybe getting a call from a church to go work with a group, and they've been through it, and it's a difficult work. Think about getting a call to go work with a church at Corinth after reading 1 Corinthians, right? That would be a challenging work, to say the least. But to go to a place where, you know, the people, the brethren there, they're discouraged, they're reproached, they're in great distress, the work there is just broken down, and Nehemiah says, I got to go. Right? I got to go help. But you didn't just have that going on. Their enemies mocked and plotted against them. So here in Nehemiah chapter 2, remember the last verse we read together, verse 10. It says, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard of it, they were deeply disturbed. Why? That a man had come to seek the well-being of the children of Israel. They're bothered that someone cares about the Jews. Okay, so there's kind of the first indication. Nehemiah returns. We're going to read this a little bit later, but in verse 19, notice. Verse 19. But when Sanballat, this is chapter 2, verse 19. But when Sanballat, the Horonite, Tobiah, the Ammonite official, and Geshem, the Arab, heard of it, they laughed at us and despised us and said, what is this thing you're doing? Will you rebel against the king? When they heard about them going to rebuild the walls or try to, they're already mocking them. They're already making fun of them. They're charging them with rebelling against the king. Of course, Nehemiah has the king's blessings and the king's help. And then coming over to chapter 4, Nehemiah, verses 1 through 3. Let's read that together. But it so happened when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall that he was furious and very indignant and mocked the Jews and spoke before his brethren, the army of Samaria, and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? No, but 52. Will they revive the stones from heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him. He said, whatever they build, even if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. Drop down to verses 7 and 8, please. Now it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed, that they became very angry, and all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. So think about it. It wasn't just the words. It wasn't just the verbal assaults and attacks. It wasn't just the mocking and laughing, despising and scorning. They were gathering up their men, armies, to come and actually attack Jerusalem to put this to a stop. So they had the odds against them with all these things, didn't they? But in spite of all those negatives, as significant as they were, I want you to notice with me all the positives now in their favor. You know, this remnant had strong, godly leadership. And it starts there. It's so key. It's always been key among God's people. When you go back and study Israel's history, and then when the kingdom divided, when they had strong, godly leadership, which was rare, but how well things went for God's people. And today, when the Lord's people in various places have strong, godly leadership, the work more than likely is going to go well. Well, who do they have? They had Ezra. You know, the book just prior to Nehemiah, of course, these two men are contemporary, but you think back to, again, Cyrus's decree. The first group was led back by Zerubbabel, right? The second group was led back by Ezra, and then and the groups got smaller and smaller. Zerubbabel had the larger group, then Ezra had a smaller group, and then we have Nehemiah, and some came back with him. But as you go back to the book of Ezra, and we just briefly read about him in chapter 7, notice what it said about him in verse 10 of Ezra 7. For Ezra prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach statutes and ordinances in Israel. He was both a priest and scribe. But here's a strong, godly leader, mature man of God, who personally had prepared his heart to do these three things: seek the law, to do the law, and then to teach it to others. Well, we come over to Nehemiah chapter 8, and that's exactly what he's doing, right? The people are gathered together before the water gate, remember? And they told Ezra the scribe in verse 1, to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded Israel. Verse 2 of Nehemiah 8. So Ezra the priest brought the law before the assembly of men and women, and all who could hear with understanding the first day of the seventh month. Then he read from it in the open square that was in front of the water gate from morning until midday. before the men and women and those who could understand, and the ears of all the people were attentive to the book of the law. So Ezra the scribe stood on the platform of wood which they had made for the purpose, and beside him at the right hand stood, and I'll let you read those names, and use your imagination as I would. And then verse 5, and Ezra opened the book in the sight of all the people, for he was standing above all the people, and when he opened it, notice what the people did, all the people stood up. And Ezra blessed the Lord, the great God, and all the people answered, Amen, Amen, while lifting up their hands, and they bowed their heads and worshiped the Lord and their faces with their faces to the ground. And then we read the various men and the Levites, verse 7, who helped the people to understand the law, and the people stood in their place, so they read distinctly from the book and the law of God, and they gave the sense and helped them to understand the reading. We'll stop there at verse 8. But it's a great text, all the people being gathered together. There needed to be physical restoration among the people, but they needed spiritual restoration as well. And that's something that Nehemiah focused on a lot. He's focused on the wall, but when you read through the book of Nehemiah, one of my favorite Old Testament books, this great strong leader also helps them so much spiritually to walk in the ways of God. But what a team effort here, Ezra and then with Nehemiah. You know, when we're first introduced to Nehemiah back in chapter 1, one of the first things that really should impress us about this man, when he receives news about the people and about the walls, what's the first thing that he does? He takes it to God in prayer, doesn't he? And then he's very humble. He acknowledges the sins of his father's house, his own sins, how corrupt God's people had become. Obviously, thinking back to why they had to go into 70-year captivity, because they continued to rebel against God and not keep his covenant. And so we as you study through much of Nehemiah, that will keep coming up, how he keeps praying. In fact, at the end of chapter 1, what's the last thing that he mentions as he beseeches God's favors? He already has made up his mind, I'm going to go before the king and I'm going to have to bring this up. And so he asked that God would prosper his servant, I pray, grant me mercy in the sight of this man. And then we're told he's the king's cupbearer, right? And then he goes before the king, as he normally does, serving before him, but as was not normal, he couldn't hide his feelings because it was weighing on his mind and his heart so much, he was just sad. And he says, I've been sad before his presence. You weren't supposed to be sad as you served the king. You're supposed to be cheerful, happy. The king knew he wasn't sick. The king observed that he's sad, and he brings it up, and notice the text says he became dreadfully afraid. But what does he do next? Nehemiah. Verse 4. When the king asked him, after he tells him why he's sad, verse 3, verse 4, the king said to him, what do you request? So what did he do? He prayed again. So I prayed to the God of heaven. Now, how long do you think that prayer was? Give me about 20 minutes here to pray. No. Some of our prayers, and they ought to be, are longer in extent, and some may be very brief, and I suspect this was a very brief one. Lord, please be with me right now. Please strengthen me. Please give me wisdom. Help me to express this in the right way. Give me courage. But I'm sure it was a very brief prayer, but he prayed. And God's blessings were upon him with the king, right? And then later, in chapter 4, when the enemies, Sanballat and Tobiah, were, and we read about the army of Samaria and how they're mocking the Jews. How does Nehemiah handle that? How do a lot of people handle that today? If people are making fun of them, or mocking them, or going at them, they go right back at them. That's not what Nehemiah did. He gave it to God. He prayed. Verse 4, Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn the reproach on their own heads and give them as plunder to the land of captivity. But he gives it to God. You know, you handle it. But you hear what they're doing towards us, your people. And then in verse 9, after they were conspiring to come and attack Jerusalem to create confusion, verse 8, verse 9 of chapter 4 of Nehemiah, nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God, and because of them, we set a watch against them day and night. But again, they continue to pray. And then in chapter 6, verse 9, "For they are all trying to make us afraid, saying their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." We need to be men and women of prayer like Nehemiah was, a man of prayer. But that's a mark of strong godly leadership when that's the first thing you do and that you continue to do, to pray without ceasing. That was Nehemiah. What else do we notice about him? We'll come over here to chapter 2 again. And when he goes before the king, and the king says, "Well, what are your requests?" And he prays about it. Then he tells him, and he secures building materials in advance, right? He's already been thinking about this. What am I going to need before I go before the king and I make this request? So he's already thought about this. And then prior to gathering the leaders and the people together, when he arrives in Jerusalem, he inspects the job site himself first. So come with me to chapter 2, verse 11. Verse 11, beginning. And let's read verses 11 as you see on the screen through verse 20. "So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I rose in the night, I and a few men with me. I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem, nor was there any animal with me except the one on which I rode. And I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well and the refuse gate, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were burned with fire," as you've been told, right? "Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal under me to pass. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered by the valley gate, and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. Then I said to them, 'You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come, and let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach.' And I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken to me. So they said, 'Let us rise up and build.' And they set their hands to this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they laughed at us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing you're doing? Will you rebel against the king?'" Verse 20, "So I answered them and said to them, 'The God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem.'" And so you notice again the strong godly leadership of Nehemiah, that when he arrives, before he even gets everybody together, say, "Hey, this is what we need to do," he hasn't been there. He hasn't seen it. He, like many of the other Jews, had been carried away off into captivity, but he still cares about back home. He still cares about his people, who he knows has returned. But now he's back, and the first thing he does is he goes out by himself, no one knows it, to observe the wall, to see it for himself. Then he gathers the leaders together. And not every leader can do this, but he stirred them up. He inspired them. He motivated them. He stirred up the spirit of the people with rebuilding the walls there in verses 17 and 18 when he says, "You see the distress we're in and how Jerusalem lies waste. Its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach." And their response is, "Let us rise up and build." Think about it again. It's been 94 years since they've been back. They've had other leaders. They've had good leaders. They've had Zerubbabel. They've had Ezra. They've had Zechariah and Haggai, the prophets, and they've done a good work. When they stopped rebuilding the Lord's house, they just had the foundation. They rebuked them. Because you got your paneled houses, and here's the Lord's house that lies in ruins. And they did finally finish building the Lord's house, the temple, again. But they've lacked leadership with the walls until Nehemiah arrived and inspired them to do so. You know, something else key and a positive in their favor is the people had a mind to work. Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 6, so we built the wall, and the entire wall was joined together up to half its height. Why? For the people had a mind to work. Brethren, friends, look out. Watch out, when the people of God have a mind to work, things are going to get done. Great things will be accomplished in the Lord's work when God's people have a mind to work. And they did. You say, how did they do this in 52 days? Well, here are two reasons. Thirdly, the people joined together in a united effort. Nehemiah chapter 3. This is one of my favorite chapters in the book, though I can't, again, pronounce, I'm sure, properly a lot of the names that are listed there. But there's such teamwork here. There's such unity that we read in this text. And what you're going to find repeated over and over again as you kind of scan over or read through chapter 3 is next to him, next to them, next to him, next to them. You see, they were shoulder to shoulder in the work, and they were working on different sections of the wall. It's like a family or individual or individuals were given this portion of the wall. And so every day, think about it, for 52 days, this is where your focus is. And then next to him, this is what you're working on. And next to them, and this is what your focus is on. And then wouldn't that be inspiring? I mean, as you're working, you can visit and talk and encourage each other and see the progress as you go along doing the Lord's work. That's what was going on. Notice with me, and we'll read a little bit of it. Verse 1, then Eliashib, the high priest. See, he was getting his hands dirty. The high priest, he rose up with his brethren, the priest, and he built the sheep gate. They consecrated it, hung its doors. They built as far as the Tower of the Hundred and consecrated it. Then as far as the Tower of Hanel. Next to Eliashib, the men of Jericho built. And next to them, Zachar, the son of Imri, built. Also the sons of Hassanah built the fish gate. They laid its beams and hung its door with its bolts and bars. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Koz, made repairs. Next to them, Meshulam, the son of Barakai, the son of Meshabel, made repairs. Next to them, Zadok, the son of Bananiah, made repairs. And I mean, that's how it just keeps going. You get the idea. And for the most part, as you read through this text in chapter 3, most everyone was involved in this great work, with rare exception. But you know, there's always some. There's always some in any work. I'm sure it's true here, as it's true where I preach and all the places I preach. There's some of God's people who just won't participate, who won't do the work. You have it in verse 5. I stopped at verse 4. Look at verse 5. Next to him, or next to them, rather, the Tekoites made repairs, but their nobles did not put their shoulders to the work of their Lord. Now, I wonder why. Well, maybe we're told in the verse because they were nobles. That's my only guess. Maybe they thought, well, we're nobles. This is for others. But I want you to notice, they wouldn't put their shoulders or their necks to whose work? Was it the work of Nehemiah? Well, yeah, he was there leading them, inspired them. But it's the work of the Lord. What work are you doing here, Laurel Canyon? Well, if it's in accordance with God's word, it's the work of the Lord. Right? If we're striving to faithfully abide in the doctrine or teachings of Christ, it's the work of the Lord. Paul said, therefore, be ye steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Right? 1 Corinthians 15:58. It's the work of the Lord. So there's application, yes, then, but there's application now about putting our shoulders to the work of the Lord. You know, it wasn't just the men, though. Verse 12. And next to him was Shallum, the son of Halohesh, leader of half the district of Jerusalem. He and his daughters made repairs. We got families, whole families working together to get the wall back up, rebuilt. It's inspiring, this story. It really is.
And then they continued to work and they were prepared to fight as their enemies threatened. You come over to Nehemiah chapter 4 in verses 9 through 23. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God, and because of them, we set a watch against them day and night. Then Judah said, the strength of the laborers is failing. There's so much rubbish that we're not able to build the wall. And our adversary said, they will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease. So it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came, they told us 10 times, for whatever place you turn, they will be upon us. Therefore, I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall, the openings, and I set the people according to their families with their swords and their spears and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, your houses. And it happened when our enemies heard it, and it was known to us that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work. We don't have much time, so I'm going to stop there my reading. But what they continue to do, despite the threats, they never stop working. They have a tool in one hand and a weapon in the other. And they set the watch. And Nehemiah goes on to say, if trouble comes, he had the trumpeter next to him. You hear the sound of the trumpet, then rally does. But our God fights for us. But what an inspirational leader, as he says, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome. And fight for your brethren. Fight for your sons. Fight for your daughters. Fight for your wives. Fight for your home. And they did. And most importantly, as we conclude our first period together, God was with them. God was with his people in this great work. Even their enemies realize this. You know that opening verse, our text we began with in chapter 6, 15 and 16, so the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. And it happened when all our enemies heard of it and all the nations around us saw these things that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. Even the enemies recognize that. So as we conclude this morning, let me leave you with this thought. What could you do in 52 days? What could you do in 52 days? We'll pick that up in our next lesson.